Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio WNML to keep up with breaking sports news. Now, back to Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson, and we are here at Twin Peaks, right where, of course, you can find it right here on North Shore between Kingston Pike and Paper Mill. And that thermostat sitting right now, Jimmy Himes, at 29.2 degrees in terms of the beer cooler. And so it's a perfect place to head into this incredible weekend where you have so much going on. But right now it's time for the Pigskin Panel, which we convene once again. It's brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, East Tennessee's truck accessory superstore, when it has to be the best, Phoenix Conversions.
And we're pleased to be joined by VFL former star football player at the University of Tennessee, Will Overstreet. Will, how are you?
Doing very well. Glad to be here. Always good to be here on a Friday, especially a Friday before an Alabama game.
Well, thank you for joining us. John Pennington with the Sports Source. John, what can we look forward to on Sunday?
Well, we'll be breaking down the Alabama game and looking ahead to the open date and seeing where this program is headed. It's going to be an interesting game considering all the people that are banged up for UT, who's out there, who's not. But we'll have the usual 55 guys on our show Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on WATE6, 90 minutes of post-game coverage with VFLs, media guys, and everything. Should be fun.
It was the Ole Miss game where the end of the game didn't end the way anybody would have liked it to as far as the debris being thrown on the field. We've had a week to digest it. John Pennington, the SEC, since we last talked, fined Tennessee $250,000 and said, you need to do the best job you can do of finding the perpetrators and suspending them from activities for a year. Do you think that's a fair punishment?
Yeah, I would just throw the people out. If we caught you on tape, you're gone. I don't know about for a year.
Would you go longer?
Yeah, you're just gone, and that's stupid. Yeah. Sorry. And if you tell me, well, I was drunk, well, then you probably shouldn't be back in the stadium. If you're in danger of throwing something every time you have a drink, that's not smart. But is it fair? I don't know. People complained about the refs. They complained about the media coverage. They complained about the fine. I look at it this way. What I've learned in my life of years of doing stupid things and getting in trouble and getting people upset with me, when you do something dumb, you're giving the power to some other judge. That could be media. When you've done something, that could be media, that could be the public, that could be your friends, that could be your enemies, you're giving them something to talk about. And you can't control what they're talking about once you've done this. You also give the power to someone else to weigh in on how you broke a rule or broke a law or broke a norm of society. Someone's going to say, here's your punishment. There's an old saying, if you're not prepared to do the time, don't do the crime. And that's part of this. So I have a hard time listening to any complaints. Well, this fine was bigger than what somebody else got. Then don't throw stuff and delay a game for 20 minutes. And I know that everybody comes back. I've heard it all week. Well, what about Ole Miss? They threw stuff. Didn't delay the game 20 minutes down there in Oxford. I've watched sports for 50 years. Well, 45. Let's say I started as a five-year-old. 45 years,
right,
I've never seen
you picked up smoking.
Exactly, yes, which was one of the troubles I was talking about, and I've been judged ever since. But, in 45 years, I've never seen a game delayed 20 minutes by people throwing stuff on the field. So, look, deal with the fine. It is what it is. If it's not fair, well, you put it in someone else's hands. If you don't like how it's being covered, you put it in someone else's hands. Don't want that to happen? Don't do something stupid. Easier said than done. I'll probably do something stupid tomorrow and everyone can remind me of this. But I'm not going to cry if I do and say, whoa, whoa, it's me. You're punishing me. I did it. Deal with it. And that's the way I feel about this. Yeah, it's a fine. You did it. Deal with it.
Will Overstreet, how do you say that?
Yeah, I mean, as pointless and useless an activity as you can do. I mean, if you're mad at the city or the postman, throwing trash in your own yard doesn't show sign of respect and likability of your house. And just saying I have pride about my house, it's just throwing trash in my yard. It makes me a bad neighbor and doesn't do anything or change any situation of that. And so I thought it was a useless show of gesture that actually the only thing it can do is have negative repercussions. There was nothing that was positive going to come from that. I mean, you know, it's just not something you can sit there and say and be behind, because, you know, I heard people say, oh, we're showing our passion. You know what? You can be passionate. You can have too much passion on something. You can have too much of your life dedicated to something, and it's too much overboard. There's such things as everything in moderation. And so you can't let that be the defining moment and say that because we're passionate, we can throw trash in our yard.
Well, and if you're that passionate, how come you haven't had a sellout since 2017? If you're that passionate, well, we can't control our passion. Well, then I've not seen a sellout over there since 2017. So I'm not getting the disconnect here. I'm not seeing where these two things tie together.
Yeah, and it is. It's you know, the majority of fans, obviously we're not throwing the
exactly.
large majority. This is just a few people, and like I said, the punishment should be to be thrown out. I don't know if it's 1 year, if it's 2 years, it's 3 years. But, you know, the NBA, all these other leagues, and let's face it, the SEC is big-time football. It's on TV. It makes a ton of money. And the NBA is pretty clear. If you throw a Coke, a drink at some player's face, you're gone. They take
yep.
your tickets. You're never there again. So I don't think this is unprecedented to say, if we can identify you, there's going to be a ramification.
Yeah, the fact that it's only a year is what stands out. That's what's different. Most
right.
of them are
Madison
get out,
Square
you're
Garden,
done.
I think they said, okay, your tickets are gone. You're never back here again.
Well, when we had Danny White on, Tennessee's athletic director, he said at least a year.
Yeah.
He didn't limit it to that. So, Will, you were a highly recruited athlete. Now, I should have prefaced it by saying Kevin Steele spoke at the quarterback club on Monday. He said this will not have a negative impact on recruiting. You were highly recruited. Do you think this could have an impact on recruiting?
I'll tell you where it can have an impact. So put it this way. Just like I said all that, there was nothing positive in recruiting out of this. So now we're just talking, is it neutral or negative, right? So none of this stuff, if anybody thinks that showing your passion of throwing this stuff on the ground shows players out there you care, it didn't do that. I know that for a fact. Where you can get hurt by this is the mom or the dad. I don't think the player this matters that much to be honest. But it's the mom or the dad that go, is that where I want my son to go?
Yeah.
That's where, and so it's probably not a big effect, but if you're 50-50 and it's this school and this school, and, you know, I know how I made my decision. My parents took me out of school. They took me away. We made a chart of pluses and minuses. And there were all kinds of different things in there, right? And if one of them, if somebody else is making that kind of decision, and all of a sudden you got one more negative of, I don't know, and that's what they're using, it can make a difference and break the other way. I don't see it's only going to break to the negative. It's not going to break to the positive.
And John Wilkerson, we also know that Kevin Steele said, this isn't just a Tennessee problem. This is a society problem. This could happen in a lot of places. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think we have seen it in other places, not to this mm-hmm. degree. And I do think that there is, I think folks that have spent a lot of time not being a part of crowds on a consistent basis over the last couple of years for what everybody has had to deal with, I think for some there's a learning curve to remember you're not in your home, you do have to wear pants, and you have to realize that you're a part of a greater group. And for that reason, you don't get to just do everything you want to do. Joel Silverberg was talking about how he and his wife went to the movies for the first time since everything shut down a little bit earlier in the summer. And he said you could tell there were some people, just the way that they were speaking and speaking loudly to the people they were with, it's like, this isn't Netflix. We all paid to be a part of this crowd just like you did, so please. And there were some people that weren't as polite as Joel was. So I just think that, yeah, I think there's a learning curve in terms of realizing, okay, you're back into the swing of things. But I do believe it's societal, and I do agree with what Steele added to in terms of the impact of social media, where you have people who simply believe that either one, they're invisible, or two, invincible, that because they want to do it and because they're just used to being able to say, yes, I like this, or no, I don't like this, that they get to be that way. And again, you got to realize you're out in public, and for that reason, you just need to guard yourself a little bit, because as the conversation is gone, there are ramifications if you act up or act out.
And really, truly, let's just face it. If one of these bottles gets thrown and hits somebody up the head the wrong way, you know, it could be life ending, right? And so,
and life altering for the idiot who threw it,
right? And so, like, I mean, this is a safety thing. When you come down to it, it doesn't seem that harmful. Maybe if you're doing it right then, but when you see that thing you just threw hit somebody upside the head, I guarantee you go, oh no, that could be bad. And so, I mean, it's just like being in the theater. You can't scream out fire, right? Otherwise, you see penalties, consequences, and they're real. They're called jail time. So we're not talking about that here, but that's the kind of thing that in an unsafe environment, you could do something to get you there.
John Wilkerson, no offense to Jimmy and Will, my favorite human on the earth is John Wilkerson. But I'm going to have to disagree with him here. Is societal part of it? Yes, and social media, certainly part of it. Social media, I've said for years, will be the end of this republic. I never dreamed it would happen as soon as it's happening. But you just look, in terms of society, a summer ago, Portland turned into the poster child for anarchy. We had a riot at the United States Capitol with people chanting, "Hang the Vice President." Now, there are people out there who will deny that either of those happened because they live in their own personal la-la land. But there is a societal rage that we have now. We're losing our couth as a people. So I give you that. However, and I'm from here. People can say, well, love it or leave it, or this Yankee coming down here saying this. Hey, I was born at Blount Memorial Hospital. Lived around East Tennessee my entire life. Went to the University of Tennessee. Grew up loving Neyland Stadium. I've got more orange memorabilia in my house than you could shake an orange shaker at. That said, everything comes back to this fan base's lunatic fringe factor, and all fan bases have a lunatic fringe. This is just lunaticier because things happen here you don't see elsewhere. And you may support the things I'm about to mention, but you have to admit, oh, yeah, just here. And, oh, yeah, everybody in the nation looked at it and it didn't make you look good. Where else have you seen a fan base run off a Sweet 16 coach with a petition to bring back another coach that had been fired for getting its basketball program on probation? I'll wait. The answer is nowhere. Where else have you seen a social media riot lead a weak, wimpy, balsa wood-spined administration and imbecile politicians to get involved and undo, tear up a contract that has already been signed with a new coach? Which, by the way, doesn't really help you find new coaches, as we've seen. Nowhere. You haven't seen that anywhere but here. You talk about people throw things. Anybody ever seen a game delayed 20 minutes? Anybody ever seen the home team band and cheerleaders have to be taken off the field for cover? Answer, no. You don't see it anywhere else. That is the issue with the lunatic fringe of this fan base, and they love the bad boy reputation. They revel in it. That's the whole thing. We're undefeated. They talk like tough guys. Well, you don't see it elsewhere. I think the majority of people out there who went to UT and who love UT think they're nitwits. So while it is a societal issue, yes, I think there's a group here that brings it back home more often to this campus than we see it on other campuses.
Okay. I was going to do follow-up, but, we're going to move on.
Sorry.
But I do have something to bring back to that.
I'm bringing my passion, Jimmy. You mouth off to me, I'll throw something at you.
Well, you just try. We'll ban you. Hendon Hooker, Tennessee quarterback, injured late in the game against Ole Miss. He did practice some this week. Some have speculated he's starting. Some have said, no, he might not play. Who knows? He is making the trip, and I'm told he would be available to play if necessary. Will Overstreet, behind what is a banged-up offensive line, would you play Hooker against Alabama?
Man, I'd be awfully resonant to do that. I mean, just looking at what we have coming up and, you know, in the Kentucky game and saying, hey, you know, looking at them, they're very beatable with a Hendon Hooker with your team on the field, right? So saying, man, am I going to be risking him actually getting hurt in this game and not being available for that game and then probably – being definitely, you know, putting in the category of not likely to win, I'd have a hard time if I'm looking at the long-term plan here of saying, yeah, I'm going to play him in this game.
John Pennington.
As an analyst, I wouldn't play him. And I would say that for all the guys who are 50-50, iffy, you know, the kind of things, well, he's going to give it a go. I would be saying nobody's giving it a go. If you're healthy, you're playing. If not, you're going to sit. because you've got Alabama this week, which you're probably not going to win. Then you get the open date. Look, people will put up with a loss to Alabama a lot more than they'll put up with a loss to Kentucky. Loss to Kentucky is going to haunt you. Shouldn't, but it will, even in year one. So I would try and aim all I could toward Kentucky in the back end of this stretch. But that's as an analyst. Coaches don't think of it that way typically. So my guess is he's going to look at it, Josh Heupel, and think, this could be the week that Alabama fumbles five times. If we pull an upset, what does that do for this program? What does that do for me? Oh, my goodness. So I'm guessing if you can go, you'll go. If it were me as an analyst, I would say hold them back and recharge for Kentucky.
Yeah, so the split the hairs there is you let the guy play in the first few series. You start seeing how this game's going. If we're being a little bit competitive, okay, keep going. And then you start looking at it from that judgment and just say, do we get in that game, right? You know, where they do fumble it twice early on, and all of a sudden we're neck and neck or got 7-point lead. Then you're like, okay, let's keep the momentum. We're not doing anything different. But if it ever becomes, oh, they got us 21 here.
Right.
We ain't finishing this way. You know, we're going to the backup immediately then.
So the backup's Joe Milton. Will Overstreet, what would you expect out of Milton if he goes against Alabama?
Some overthrows. I mean, you're going to have a guy. You do have a big, strong guy that can run the ball, and that's his biggest strength, right? He can throw the deep ball. He can hit those people. So they do have to stay with him. They can't, you know, he's a guy, you know, we always heard about Brett Favre when we play him in the pros. He go, coach, I tell you, he can make any throw on this field. If you leave your guy, you may think there's no way that guy can make that throw. He will throw it and make it. He will also throw it to three people, one guy with three people around him. Yeah. So stay with your guy. So he's the kind of guy you have to guard, because if he got the deep ball going in a game like this, you'd be like, oh, man, he can throw that anywhere on this field. He can hit them. So they would have to still play as tough until they see what's he going to do. But, I mean, there's nothing that you can say right now with the game tape you've seen that says, okay, he's going to pull it together, and all of a sudden he's what shows up in practice, right? So right now you're looking at a guy and you're going, okay, we're going to let him throw the deep ball until he shows us he can hit it. And so if I'm Alabama, I'm going to play him going, he's going to run the ball. We're going to play tight up, you know, man to man against on the deep stuff. And we'll just see if he beats us that way. If he does it, if he scores 21 points on us that way, okay, then we'll start changing our mind. But, you know, I'm not going to be too worried about it. I'm going to make him prove that he's not what I saw on tape.
So if you're Alabama, you're going to start the game with press coverage, getting up on the receivers, and force him to beat you with a deep throw.
Yeah, that's it. I haven't seen him hit it. I haven't seen him hurt anybody. So guess what? Go for it.
So, John Wilkerson, if Milton is the starter, how do you alter your play calling, your game plan? Do you – because Hooker's a better runner.
Yeah.
But do you run Milton knowing that – at least he's got a chance as a runner, but he seems to be an unwilling runner at times.
Yeah, and the fact that there's now greater context and detail to what we have seen Joe Milton do in the orange and white, I really like the way that Josh Heupel game plans, whether it be Hendon Hooker, whether it be giving his team and putting his players in the best position to succeed. So I would imagine that he's got a better feel for, okay, he might have looked outstanding and all-world and all-American in practice, but that hasn't translated on the game day Saturdays. So my guess is that he would emphasize heavily what he sees as his strengths. And as you pointed out, that while the underneath has been where he's been pretty consistent, if that is indeed taken away, then maybe you do have to roll him out to see if you give somebody the opportunity to get open deep. And then also... maybe utilize that if they are going to press cover the receivers right up against the line, then maybe you hit the back coming out of the backfield. Not that he wouldn't be accounted for, but just something along those lines. I just think that Heupel has shown he's got a really good eye for what he sees as his game plan and would try and utilize what has been Milton's best performances to date.
Well, and here's the deal. Henry Toutou is on that team. And if you know anything about his one weakness, it's figure out how to get somebody matched up with him in the passing game. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm Heupel, I'm figuring out every one of my big plays is, can I get them to move toe-to-toe to the guy I want open? And that's where I'm attacking, because, I mean, let's face it, that's what teams did against us last year. That's what he's never been good at. And he, once again, how Milton had put the tape on that he can do that well, Toto, from what I've seen, has not put the tape on that says he can do that well.
Since you mentioned him, John Pennington, Pro Football Focus does not grade Henry To'o very positively, do they?
No. As a matter of fact, I checked today just to see if it had changed. They've graded 33 Alabama defensive players who've played enough snaps that they chart them. He is ranked number 33 on their list. He has gotten worse in each of his 3 years in college. His best year was his first year, according to them, which I wouldn't disagree with. I think he lost too much weight after that first year. But the fact that they rank him 33rd, I wonder about that because Nick Saban's a pretty good coach. I can't imagine that he's not doing what Nick Saban is asking him to do and that maybe the Pro Football Focus guys aren't grading it the same way Nick Saban is.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine he's saying, yeah, I'm going to keep starting the 33rd best player on my defense. That said, he's 7th in the SEC in tackles, 39th in solo tackles, not in the top 50 in tackles for loss, doesn't defend passes very well, isn't a pass rusher. He's not been what a lot of us cracked. I'll put myself in there, too. After that first year, the hype train was rolling with this guy, and I was a part of it. He has not lived up to that. Will, I'll say this. You called that one early, that overrated. And he has seemed overrated. So I think there is some irony there. If Josh Heupel can dial something up and take advantage of Henry To'o, that would be a even if you don't win the game, that would be a fun little bit of vengeance. You want to transfer to get down there? Here, eat 3 touchdown passes over your head. We may lose 42-21, but you're going to be responsible for the 21. No, that's I'll be watching for that. I hadn't thought about that. That'll be a kick.
When we come back, we'll talk about other elements of the Alabama defense. And Alabama's defense, so they were vulnerable against the run against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But they're giving up 90 yards rushing per game this season, which is a pretty good number. Will Overstreet, how important is it for Tennessee? I put down, can they get 125 yards rushing? Maybe you think they can get a lot more. What do you think is the number Tennessee needs to rush for against Alabama to hang in there against the Crimson Tide?
It's 125 to 150, somewhere in that area. Now, that number, I think, can be a little bit deceiving because you got Alabama's offense throwing up 21 points fairly quickly. So somebody goes, I'm not in this game unless I start throwing the ball. So I think that probably helps them a little bit there, and so they don't see a lot of just staying with the run throughout the game. But, you know, overall, I do think you have to have that part of this game in there. And I think if you get to 125, 150 based on how Heupel runs his offense, that means you've hit deep balls, right? You've spread them out. You've done the other things. So if you're doing that, you didn't just line up and mono and mono mash Alabama, right, to get that 125, 150. You engineered it from other plays. So if you're in the game, you can get it. But, if you're just saying we're one-dimensional in one way or the other, you're going to be in trouble.
John Pennington, with Tennessee banged up on the offensive line again, Cade Mays probably won't play. Who knows about Cooper Mays? How difficult do you think it'll be for Tennessee to run against Alabama?
Well, and then you throw in Tyon Evans may not go, too. Yeah. So probably won't go. So it's going to be difficult. I mean, look, I think you could get the numbers simply because your offense is so built this year on the run. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back a few years, it's a different offense, but Georgia Southern ran that triple option. They went for 300 on Alabama. Wasn't a close game. So I think Tennessee could go for 125, 150 yards if that's what you're having to do over and over again, especially if you got Joe Milton out there. I could see them getting 125, 150 yards and still losing big. So in terms of how much they have to rush for to still stay in the game, that's a bigger number for me. I think you almost at 200 yards.
Yeah, well, and it depends. You know, are you running the ball to run out the clock?
Right.
Get out there?
Yeah.
That's still a different – yeah, that's a different 125 to 150 than
– Exactly.
We're hitting the balls over here and here, and now we're changing it up. So, yeah, it's probably is a hard number to come up with on that.
I would feel better about this if I knew Tyon Evans was going to play, if I knew Hendon Hooker was healthy, and I wouldn't feel bad about running him if I were Josh Heupel, if I knew the Mays brothers were going to play. Then I'd be sitting here feeling, you might have a puncher's chance. But with all those guys banged up and questionable, I don't know that you've got a puncher's chance.
Bryce Young, 24 touchdown passes. That leads the SEC. It's top 5 in the nation. John Pennington, how good do you think Young is?
Well, you sent a note that said, how good is he? And my answer was going to be 24 touchdown passes, 3 interceptions, 70% completions.
See, I didn't mention 2 of those.
Yeah, you didn't mention it. So, to me, that tells you all you need to know. I mean, it's interesting to see how Alabama has upped the game at quarterback. When they were a defense first team, you had a Greg McElroy who was a, decent game manager. You had some guys like that. But then you got Tua. Then you got Mac Jones. Then you got this kid. They have inched themselves up. It's like, well, we're going to have to shift to a more offensive first mentality. So we're going to have to really go get some top-notch quarterback play. And this guy seems to be, just from watching him, and it's limited how much I've watched him, but he seems to be a step up from Mac Jones and Tua Tagovailoa, which is saying something to me. I mean, those numbers are pretty much speak for themselves.
And they've changed some of the things about their defensive line. It looks like Alabama used to run that 3-4, 260, 270 outside linebacker guy. Now they got a guy that was like 230, 225 coming off the edge. So, I think they've also said to their, well, we're going to be in a high-scoring game, so they're going to have to throw the ball, so we're going to get pass rush, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And we're not going to worry about the run too much because we're going to think our offense is going to take care of their rushing game by not allowing them to have it because they're going to have to throw the ball to get in this game.
It's kind of like what the Colts did. They went out and got pass rushers because they felt like, we're going to be ahead. Y'all going to have to throw.
Exactly.
We're going to do this. John Wilkerson, we talked with Kevin Skarbinski, and he said Najee Harris is one of the best running backs Alabama's ever had, but Brian Robinson more of a workhorse. He's not going to break long runs, but he's going to give you 5, 5, 5, 5. How important is Robinson to this offense?
Well, I think he realizes what they need him to be, and he isn't going to have the flash, and he's not necessarily, while he could give you the big play on occasion, he's not somebody who's going to do it on a semi-regular basis. But I do think that it was a really perfect description, and just watching how that team battled as it fell and tried to dig out of its hole against Texas A&M, it really was impressive because even though they would pull close or even, Texas A&M would come up with a big play like the kick return for a touchdown, but they just went right back to it. Just to say about Young, that was what was so impressive. He wasn't rattled at all by any of that. And those were mistakes that were made that he helped dig the hole that they found themselves in early on in that game. But I thought the same thing about Robinson. He's somebody who's good at catching the football. He's also going to give you tough yardage when he gets the opportunity to run the football. There are quite a few that would fall short of what Najee Harris meant to Alabama because he's just that good. And I thought he was the best back all around in the country because block, run, catch. He could even throw it, I think, if you wanted him to. But I really think that he's somebody who is going to bring his lunch pail and make sure that he gets the job done that he's asked to do.
Will, as far as Alabama's receiving corps, they've turned out so many first-round picks in recent years. How good do you think this receiving core is?
Man, it's hard to say how they get much better than the other ones, but, when you have 4 or 5 guys that can get open, it makes everybody look better, right? And that's the key to them. They've got a great quarterback, but then they've got not just – you can't isolate in on one guy or even 2 guys. You go, well, which one's going to have the great night, And so they all make each other better and rise to the top. So when you have that level of competition in practice and then you take it to the game, they can be as good as they want to be, I guess, at the end of it. It's hard to say how do they top some other ones just because it's hard to top the best already. So every time – it seems like every year they're just reloading and trying to see, can we be a little bit better than last year? But you don't see much drop-off, and that's the crazy part.
They just had a 5-star receiver that can't get on the field, and he tweeted out, "I quit." Now, I don't know what's happened to him since then, but he was unhappy with his lack of playing time. All right, when we come back, we'll ask the question, which was asked several times this week of coaches. If one team is dominating another, is it still a rivalry? Alabama's won 14 in a row. Most of the games have been one-sided. Tennessee had a close call when Kiffin was here, a close call when Butch Jones was here. A lot of people have debated, is this a rivalry? Obviously, Nick Saban said, yes, it is, because if you lose this game, look at the repercussions. Will Overstreet, how do you see it? Is it a rivalry if one team dominates the other?
Well, I think it's proportioned to how many years you've lived. If you're 15 years old, this isn't much of a rivalry, right? If you're 75, you probably still think this is a rivalry. I think it's about that. I think it's what memories you have. For me, I was 4-0 against Alabama. So I'm going to say it's still a rivalry. It's just not a very good one right now.
That's a perfect example. I was 11 years old when Tennessee finally beat Alabama to end the 11-year streak in 1982. And for all of you out there saying, he hates the Vols, I just got that newspaper framed just a couple weeks ago. It's hanging in my house. But here's the thing. These rivalries are based on 40, 60, 100 years. So 14 years, while that's a painfully long streak for Tennessee fans, that is not an end to the rivalry. Let Tennessee win, and we'll see what the celebrations are like. Those victory cigars will go up. So I think it's a rivalry. We asked all four VFLs on Sunday's show, and all of them said, yeah, you keep playing this. This is a rivalry. You don't get it off the schedule. Not to mention the fact you're 0-14 versus Nick Saban. Everyone else is pretty bad, too. He's 161-24, not counting you. So he's winning 90% of it. 100% versus you, 90% versus everyone else. So it's kind of just where it is right now with Alabama and anyone.
Jeremy Pruitt's attorney came out, said that if Tennessee doesn't pay his $12.6 million buyout by October the 29th, that they're going to expose a number of violations within the Tennessee program. Rick Barnes, unhappy about that. He sent out a statement. So did Philip Fulmer. Will Overstreet, your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, the bad thing about it is you can claim anything in a lawsuit, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be true. You don't have to back it up. To make the stir and the, to make it damaging to UT, you just have to claim it. And so, I think they're using that, whether what they have is legit or not, you know, they're gonna play their hand. And, I mean, obviously Jeremy Pruitt at this point knows his college coaching career is at an end, and he's got to get as much money as he can, so you might as well go down with your last shot. Because, you know, after this, which AD supports him coming on campus if he's going to tell anything he knows eventually if you have a bad outing with him. So he's done, in my mind, as a college coach. He knows that. He's either coaching high school at Hoover again or he's coaching in the pros potentially, maybe. So I think, you know, he's going to go down swinging. So if he has something, he's going to go at it with everything he's got.
We talked about this on the show in December when everyone was saying, all right, we get rid of him for free. And we kept pointing out, all of us talked about the fact that, okay, it isn't going to be free. You're going to wind up either paying him something, probably, or he's going to start lobbing Molotov cocktails. And there's only one thing over there that's a moneymaker and a winner right now. That's men's basketball. So where's he going to lob his Molotov cocktail?
Yeah, because he can't say, look at what I know about the UT football program, because they're like, yeah, we admitted it, right?
Yeah, and nobody cares.
You did it, so you let it.
Yeah,
so,
and it's not like, you know, I know some facts about the rowing team. Nobody cares. So it's all about Rick Barnes and basketball, so I'm sure Barnes is ticked off. Nobody wants the NCAA around, whether you've done anything or not. You don't want the NCAA around.
See, that's where I was going to go, was because you don't want to go in a court of law and have people on a witness stand talking about your program, whether or not you feel like you're clean.
Exactly. Not to mention, I mean, you had the Houston Nut and Ole Miss's head coach at the time, where the discovery gets his phone records. Records lead to something else. So that's the other concern that anybody has in this. I mean, there's always a point with any lawsuit, even if you're absolutely in the right, where it's probably better to settle no matter what, because your legal costs, and at the end of the day, it's still a gamble that do you win or not win, plus all the other damage.
You've blown so much money.
Hugh Freeze had some issues with that, too.
Yeah. You've blown so much money on this already. If I'm UT, here's $6 million. Go away. Sign this non-disclosure. And if you say anything, I'll put a car bomb in your truck.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's,
you know,
that's what this
is. Here's $6. No, he's throwing those. Oh, okay. We do car bombs.
I mean, this attorney's throw here is to say maybe UT's offered. He's trying to get an extra couple million on top. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's where this is a negotiating strategy.
I don't know. I talked to somebody over there who said that they don't think this administration will settle for anything, which my thought is, that might not be a smart move. But.
Well, I heard that when there was the Title IX suit, and that got settled.
Settled, yes, for nothing, and it all went away. No. That perfect example of settle and get done with it.
What can we look forward to this Sunday, John Pennington?
We'll be breaking down the Volunteers versus Alabama. Hopefully we'll have a fun show to talk about, fun game to talk about, at least interesting game to talk about. Either way, we'll be looking forward to the rest of the schedule, and we'll have four VFLs there, including Will Overstreet. You'll be there along with three other media guys. packed house, 11 a.m., WATE6, WATE.com if you're not in the area.
John Pennington, thank you very much. Will Overstreet, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
And that takes care of the Pigskin Panel, brought to you by Phoenix Conversions, East Tennessee's truck accessory superstore. When it has to be the best, Phoenix Conversions. We'll get a break coming up. Hour number four of Sports Talk. A lot coming your way. We'll catch up with our good friend Mike Dettillier, who will tell us about a couple of VFLs doing big things for the New Orleans Saints. We also will have more comments in regards to Tennessee football. Comments from Josh Heupel, comments from Nick Saban. And, of course, up next, it's your chance to win with a sports fix at 6. Stay with us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.